Penguin Random House Audio presents The Devourers by Indra Das. Read for you by Shishir Kurup and Meera Simhan. The roaring of lions, the howling of wolves, the raging of the stormy sea, and the destructive sword are portions of eternity too great for the eye of man. William Blake, The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. Part 1. Hunting Ground. 1. My part in this story began the winter before winters started getting warmer. On a full moon night, so bright, you could see your own shadow on an unlit rooftop. It was under that moon, slightly smudged by December mist clinging to the streets of Kolkata, that I met a man who told me he was half werewolf. He said this to me as if it were no different from being half Bengali, half Punjabi, half Parsi. Half werewolf under a full moon. Not the most subtle kind of irony, but a necessary one if I'm to value the veracity of my recollections. To set the stage, I must tell you where I was. Think of a field breathing the cool of nighttime into the soles of your shoes. A large tent in front of you, cloth, canvas, and bamboo, lit from within. Electric lamps surrounding a wooden stage that creaks under the bare feet of bright-robed minstrels. This tent is where the rural bards of Bengal, the Bauls, gather every winter to make music for city people. It's raw music, at times both shrill and hoarse, stained with hashish smoke and the self-proclaimed madness of their sect. A celebration of what's been lost under the vigil of orange-eyed streetlights. I am there that night. Outside in the cold, in Shaktigar Math, a city park. I watch the Bauls and their audience through the fabric of the tent. Shadows flit across as they clap and cheer. The crowd extends outside, faces lit by cigarettes and spliffs. Hand-rolled cigarette between my fingers. Grass under my shoes. A stranger walks up and stands beside me. The street dogs are gathering by the field, their eyes hungry. It's 1 in the morning.
Afraid to go inside? The stranger asks. They may be mad, but they won't bite.
He's talking about the Bauls. I laugh dutifully. I'm afraid he wants a smoke, having seen my tin of cigarettes. I don't want to share. I roll them very carefully. I tell him I prefer the night air to the tent, not thinking to bring up the fact that there's no smoking allowed within. I ask what he's doing outside.
The music's a little too shrill for my ears. I can appreciate it just fine from here.
His voice is gentle, his words unhurried. He takes out his own hash joint. I glance sideways at him as he lights up. The flame illuminates a slender face, its glow running along hairless skin and brushing against the lines of shadow that hug his high cheekbones. I'm disarmed by his androgynous beauty before he even tells his secret.
I'm a werewolf, he says.
Smoke flares out of his mouth in curls that wreathe his long black hair, giving him silver-blue locks for a passing second. I don't see him throw away the match, but his foot moves to rub it into the soil. He's wearing wicker sandals. Dark flecks of dirt hide under unclipped nails on the ends of his long toes. Apparently, the cold doesn't bother him enough for socks or shoes. Now, I wish I could tell you this man looks wolfish, that he has a hint of green glinting in his eyes, that his eyebrows meet right above his nose, that his palms have a scattering of hair that tickles my own palms as we shake hands, that his sideburns are thick and shaggy and silvered as the bark of a snow-dusted birch at gray dawn. But I'm not here to make things up.
"Need a light?" he asks,
and I'm startled to find a new flame between his fingers, the hiss of the struck match reaching my ears like an afterthought. Afraid that I've been caught staring at his dirty toes and beautiful face, I nod, even though there's a lighter in my breast pocket. He touches the flame to my cigarette.
"You heard right," he says, tossing the match. "Well, I'm actually half werewolf, but you heard right."
I didn't ask if I'd heard right.
"You were thinking it, though," he says with a smile.
"I wasn't, actually. I can hear just fine," I assure him. He keeps smiling. I get embarrassed.
"Thanks for the light," I say with a cough.
My lungs burn from too enthusiastic a first drag. I suppose I shouldn't be boasting about my hearing. Wolves have great hearing, right?
"I'm not a wolf, and yes, they do."
"There aren't any wolves near Kolkata, are there? They're probably extinct in India."
"Just because you don't see them doesn't mean they're not there," he says.
I observe that his fingernails are as long as his toenails, and as dirty, little black sickles hiding under them. I nod, light-headed from the nicotine rush. "I've seen jackals on the golf greens at Tolly Club." He doesn't say anything. I feel compelled to keep talking. "My parents have a house, like a weekend getaway, outside the city in Banibon. The caretakers there used to scare me when I was a boy, with stories about wildcats from the woods stealing their chickens. Now that you mention it, there might have been a wolf visit. I never really believed any of those stories. They scared me, though. I never even saw any of those animals, except a snake once.
A true story.
I still remember the gray coils of the serpent lying there by the flower pots. It had been beaten to death by the help. They said it was venomous, though I certainly couldn't tell."
"You're not afraid of talking to strangers.
I like that," he says, swaying slightly now to the rising call of the bowels voices. I feel shy now, which is absurd.
"What's your other half, then? Human? Aren't all werewolves half-human?" I ask him.
He picks a bit of tobacco out of his teeth, which I don't think I've ever seen a smoker actually do. Spittle clicks between his fingertips and his tongue.
"Family history can be a tedious business, though family isn't quite the right word."
And that's all he says. For someone who clearly wants to talk to me, he says very little.
"When did you find out you were a half-werewolf?"
He shrugs.
"I've been one all my life.
Before we were called werewolves, really."
"What's it like?" I ask, the questions flowing from my smoke-soured mouth. I can't think of anything more awkward at this moment than standing beside this man and not responding to what he's just said to me.
"You've seen the movies. I am master of my fortune. The moon is my mistress."
"And cliché is your cabaret?" I ask.
Intoxicated disbelief dulls me into self-deprecation. I analyze my words, which seem nonsensical. I look around, checking to make sure the others standing around us in the field are still there, to run my eyes over the streaks of their shadows. The rhythm of the music snarls to the throb of light and shadow behind the walls of the tent. He doesn't growl at me.
"Are you an English professor by any chance?"
No, but close. I am a
Sample complete. Ready to continue?